Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Secret Circle podcast. I am David E., the moderator and host for the evening. On the panel tonight, we have Paul Joseph Ravelli, Camille Perkins, and Ryan Higgins. The discussion tonight will be centered around the idea of intellectual property. The star of questions to get you thinking are, what is intellectual property, and how is it different from real property? Is there any real problems with IP? And what is the effect of IP on society and people? What would be the effect of eliminating IP? What difficulties would a change bring, and how difficult is it to enforce IP? What is the relevance of IP in a Thelemic philosophy? After that, we'll have some thoughts on combining work life and spiritual life. We'll discuss the question of property in general, and the topic of promoting ideas without the incentive of financial gain. So basically, is making money important in contributing to human evolution? So did you get all those questions?
I like that last question an awful lot. Is making money important in the context of human evolution?
Yeah, me too. We'll get into that. I think that question may be a theme throughout the evening, but maybe we could start off by you, Paul, just defining what is intellectual property and how is it different from real property.
And the first thing we could do is possibly define what is property. And I guess without opening up too large a can of worms, we'll state simply that property is something that one person possesses and another person doesn't. Okay, so now what is intellectual property? What is the intellect? The intellect is something that develops ideas.
Yeah.
So intellectual property is idea ownership. Okay. So now, do I own an idea? Intellectual property, the idea of intellectual property says that ideas are something that you own and somebody else does not. Define ownership. Ownership is the creation of scarcity. My idea is scarce. I'm the only one that generated that idea, and not, everybody else is not commonly generating that idea. So my idea is scarce. It needs to be presented or given to other people or sold to other people in order to proliferate and to become less scarce. Okay? In scarcity, we've found in a consumer capitalist culture, we found a great way to make money. Okay? Cattle are scarce. Everybody doesn't have three cows in their backyard. Very scarce thing. I have to depend on somebody who's managed to hold on to a bunch of cattle, you know, out in the western part of the United States, who can then, you know, convert that cattle into beef that makes it into the supermarket, and it's worth my effort to buy that so that I can gain nutrition and stay alive. Okay? But does the intellect, does that idea, is that as important to my life as that piece of meat? You know, if Ryan generates this great idea and I don't get it, will I die? Well, no. I may not live as well because Ryan may have a great idea, but I won't die because of it. So intellectual property says that an idea has come to a point of scarcity and you can't use that idea, touch that idea, hear that idea without paying me first. Because I generated that idea. Okay. So this is intellectual property.
Ryan and Cammie, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I don't think ideas really can be owned exclusively. Such as the example that you gave in our previous private conversation, David, about if we watch movies and we receive the ideas from the movies, can we really say that that's something owned by someone else? Well, no. It's in our mind. I mean, they permeate. as soon as that it's made available, whether it's in a journal or information that's released for a technological device, immediately it becomes up for grabs. It's very simple to copy things. It's very simple to discuss things. The crucial issue would involve the generation of the idea, the initial generation of that idea, and the time and work and possible production costs that would go into developing it.
It's a remnant of a mercantile government. It's a remnant of this idea of where, you know, the king gives certain special people a monopoly on certain things so that other people would, you know, have to give that person money. Everyone that wants to, you know, sing songs in the key of G major has to pay, the Duchy of York, whatever.
Yeah.
So when we bring that over to the problem of individualism versus, you know, the group.
Yeah.
Well, there can be no individualism if one can own the idea and then can control the ideas of the group. No one can think for themselves.
Yeah, you know, I haven't made any strong stance on intellectual property. I agree with everything you say. I think I'd have to be more clear on how we define the exact terms. Like, example, I'm against plagiarism, for instance, and I think, when we write books and stuff, we need to cite other people. Not just an ethical code, but I think it should be a legal code on some level.
That's a matter of dignity and integrity.
Not only that, also intellectual integrity, too, so that if other people want to look up your sources.
Certainly, intellectual integrity is important, but let's turn it on the other foot for a minute.
Yeah.
And to really save this one for the conversation, what happened? Let's pretend you wrote something interesting, and I turn around and I copy that, and I put my name on the bottom of it.
Yeah.
Have I hurt you?
Sorry?
Have I hurt you?
If you're talking about, yes and no. Not really, especially if I don't know about it.
Well, that's the important point.
Yeah.
The whole thing of IP is, if I steal your idea, whether I give you credit for it or not, have I defrauded you of money, especially in the world of philanthropy, but in any way,
I see what you mean. Like, it's not the same as if I took money from you without you knowing about it, because you could argue that I did hurt you and that now you're short of assets.
But if I took your idea, so what? If the world gives me credit for it, you know what I'm saying? There's a quote on my website that's been there for years. The man who steals my idea flatters me by stealing my idea.
No, I've read that. That's on your editorial page.
Yeah, I flatter him by complaining about it.
Yeah.
See, I'm a big Yankee baseball fan. Near the end of every Yankee game, you're going to hear the announcer say, this Yankee game was copyrighted by the New York Yankees. All descriptions and accounts of this game are forbidden without the express written consent of the New York Yankees. So in other words, when I go to work tomorrow and I stand by the coffee fountain and I say, hey, I was at Yankee game last night. Oh, Derek Jeter hit that base hit in the third inning and got two runs in. That was great. I just violated the copyright.
Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous.
So let's extend that. You are a master of philosophy, Ryan. So now you've come in and you've just found a way of taking Kant's argument on pure reason and showing why, showing some hidden contradiction in his writing that nobody else has noticed before. So you have you spend your hours, you type up that paper, and you put it out into the world. But hey, no professor is allowed access to that idea until they pay you for it.
Yeah, well, now it conflicts with the intention behind my philosophical activity, which is to raise the bar for our knowledge collectively.
To advance human understanding.
I could give you a concrete example. I remember in my undergraduate degree in my last year, I wrote an essay on the I Ching, which is actually posted on my webpage. The illustrations in it are terrible, but according to my professor, that it was the best essay he'd read on the I Ching. And miraculously, in this next class on Chinese religions, I noticed he'd cut and pasted parts of my essay into his lecture notes, and I recognized them. And then I knew for sure that he stole parts of my essay when I saw the exact diagram that I had used in his lecture. And I just kept quiet and snickered about it because, I was getting good marks from him. And I was quite flattered, actually.
Good, good. Because in reality, he didn't harm you, did he?
No, not in that situation.
No. Now, it would have been nice, and it would have been credulous, had he given you the proper academic credit for that. That would have been nice. But he did not harm you in any way financially.
No. I mean, I had no intention on making money from that to begin with. I had no agreement with him. So in that situation, I have no problem with it. And to this day, I don't have a problem with it.
He couldn't have harmed you financially, even if he put that idea into a book and he made a gazillion dollars publishing that book. He still didn't harm you financially.
Well, yeah, I mean, he'd have to do the work of making the rest of the book, so...
And that book becomes that book is written on tree pulp. That is something that comes from the ground. That's real property.
Yeah.
And in that, he acquired an expense in taking it from the ground, converting it into paper, even if he paid someone else to do that, or some publisher came along to do that for him. That was the expense. Okay? If you had written that into the book, and then I stole your physical books, well, then I harmed you.
And also, his work as a professor and the establishment of his credibility in a specific area requires time, money, and energy as well, which is needed to get a book published and to find publishers and to even sell the book. So it's an organic process.
And all of that is still ethereal. Time is not a physical component. And maybe if you talk to some physicists, I don't know. But time, human energy and effort, the effort going into thinking and generating these ideas, that is something, but that is not real property.
Okay. It's not tangible property, but I mean, if you're not getting enough rest and if you're not eating, you're not going to produce much.
Well, you beg the question, is there a difference?
So it's a physical phenomenon on some level, but it's not tangible. It's not something you could put in something that's relatively static, like, a piece of coal that I've mined from the ground or something like that. So...
Well, there's no difference between tangible property and real property. It's six of one and half a dozen of the other.
I think that could lead into a whole other side discussion. So I'll go with you for the sake of continuing the conversation. But I mean, that could open up a whole other set of issues to be explored.
Well, tangible is something I can touch. That's what the word means. Real property is something I can touch. Okay, can I physically touch an idea?
Depends who you're talking to. I mean, there are people who most people would call flakes who might think that they can be touched by ideas, but I see your point.
Well, there you're talking metaphorically. We could be touched, quote-unquote, by an idea.
An idea can kill you if you put it in the right context.
No, the idea didn't kill. It was the idea that got the guy to buy the gun that then had a bullet put into your head that killed.
Well, yeah. I don't have the data or the articles on me to lend credibility to this one testament, but I remember learning from a sociology teacher back in high school of an experiment they did in psychology and the power of ideas, and they took a man who was ready to be executed in the electric chair, and they set it up where he wouldn't receive an actual electric charge from the chair. But they did turn on a switch, and they did make a very loud electric sound. And they did take a big piece of ice and run it down his back. And the guy was so intoxicated with the idea of being electrified that even without the actual physical administration of electricity, he did die from cardiac arrest and convulsions.
They were contributing to that effect, but he went and he believed that.
And well, yeah,
he had the
it's an idea
to refuse that or not.
Yeah, but it's my. I'm just using that as again something that would be a whole other side topic, which is how real are ideas exactly, and what are their real nature?
That's not an idea, Ryan. That was a suggestion, not an idea. Okay, he got a hypnotic suggestion. Okay, and his mind was tricked into believing that the situation was real. It was not an idea. An idea is an original thought that is a rearrangement of words. That's what an idea is. If I can, you know, all the words are known. Go get any dictionary, and there's all the words. All an idea is taking certain words out of that dictionary, putting them in an order that they've never been put in before, and hence an idea. Words do not touch us. They're not tangible. We can touch the paper that they're printed on, but we can't touch the words.
I think that ideas come from within, and you can't rob somebody of their inspiration.
Yeah.
No. No, you can't.
If Tammy, you write an inspired piece of literature, I can feel a sense of your inspiration inside of me, because your words will move me, okay, and I'm speaking very metaphorically, okay, they're not going to move me the way a tank might move me pushing me off of my property, okay, the whole idea of intellectual property is really an oxymoron. You cannot take a thought and turn it into something tangible that can be possessed. Indeed, once I take that thought and in any way echo that thought so that other people can receive that thought, whether I put it into a book, onto the internet, into a song, a poem, a movie, or what have you, the idea has simply been echoed but never touched. You can touch the film the movie is made on, the book the idea is put into, the computer that receives the internet file, okay, but the file itself is virtual. It's not real, okay? It's not real property. Intellectual property is the assertion that an idea can be owned, that no one else can then repeat the idea, which begs the question, why did I generate that idea?
Well, definitely recognition should be secondary. I mean, somebody who invents, who creates, should do it because they enjoy it and they want to contribute to society. But unfortunately, with the whole mercantile system, capitalistic system, they get into this idea of copyrights and so on.
Well, yeah. Here now the pretense is that the idea can be owned, and hence I'm creating this idea not to better society, but rather to put the idea out to tease you, then to hold back the idea. You can't get the whole of the idea unless you send me $29.95 plus $3.50 postage.
So just intervening here, looking back on the discussion, we're discussing intellectual property, basically ownership of ideas, which suggests that there's a scarcity of ideas, which, by the way, is not my experience at all. I experience that there's an abundance of ideas all the time.
The idea of IP, then, is to take an idea and make it scarce.
Yeah, exactly. And that goes into the next question we have here on the list. And that would be, what is the effect of this on society and people, making ideas scarce?
Well, let's talk about it down to a very basic thing. Somebody like Thomas Edison invents the light bulb. Okay? Now, should he have held on to that invention that everybody would have to pay him, you know, $5 before they could plug a light bulb into the socket? Okay? There would be no light bulbs in our home today. Do I turn on my light at night and say, oh, thank you, Thomas Edison? Okay? No. Okay? Thomas Edison brought light to the world because he can't hold that back. He might have held the patent on the production of that light bulb for a little while. Okay?
Yeah.
While he held that patent, he sat in the dark. Okay? It wasn't until that patent expired that it could proliferate.
Actually, I think he was making a fair bit of money when he had the patent, and he was well known at his time. He received a fair bit of credit.
But he was, but only a limited amount of people had light at night. The rest were still burning candles.
Oh, yeah, in this sense, because it was new, of course.
Yeah. Okay.
But he did receive social recognition.
Yeah, as soon as hadn't expired, everybody else got light.
And he had enough power to hunt down Tesla and to defame Tesla and to fight with... he actually tried to prevent Tesla from putting on a show of his inventions by denying Tesla the right to use his light bulbs to demonstrate his alternating current electricity. So what Tesla did is Tesla redesigned the light bulb in a slightly different way and used his own light bulbs just for the show.
Get around the restriction.
Yeah.
Okay? So, in other words, let's just say I channel, because our last topic was new gnosis, I channel new gnosis from the divine light. And it's got the ultimate secret for mankind. It's going to save the world. It's going to remove poverty and suffering from the world. But you can't have it unless everybody sends me $29.95 plus $3.50 postage of animal. Okay? And you buy it, but now you turn around and say, well, I bought it now. I've got the secret here. I'm going to mail it to my starving friends in Africa. And so they get, wait a minute, you can't do that, Ryan. I own the patent and the copyright on that. No, they cannot have that new gnosis unless they all send me $29.95. And you hurt me now, because now they're all doing it, and I could have made $29.95 of the 8 million people living in Africa. Okay, when you just gave it to them, but now I'm suing you for $8 bazillion. Just like they do now suing 14-year-old kids downloading music on the internet for hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah, they do that knowing that they won't collect the money, but as an attempt to create a scare, a media scare.
Create scarcity, to prevent ideas from moving. Because without my generating an idea, the people that are going to take my idea and generate other ideas off of that, that whole chain stops.
So basically the effect of IP on society and people is that information isn't moved. Communication isn't made. Things that could happen aren't really happening.
Yeah, information is withheld, and we sit in the dark.
Yeah. For example, like you talked before, Ryan, about your essay being plagiarized by your professor, college professor, or something. No?
Yeah, it was my university professor.
Yeah, I mean your university professor, yeah. And I mean, maybe he actually took that idea and made it spread much more than you could have done.
I doubt it, but doesn't really. But he could have. This is for sure.
That's a good point, David. Let's pretend for argument's sake, because the professor is already a noted member of the academic community. Okay, and he's taken that idea. He's been able to publish that in a way, Ryan, that you could not have. And because his writings are already accepted, so when he puts out something new, somebody's going to want to read it. And with that, he's now reached some other people who've gotten the benefit of that idea, and they turned around and not only repeated your idea, but appended to it even more idea. So in the appending of that idea, new ideas were then subsequently generated, and the human community has benefited from that. If only in the intellectual sphere, the academic sphere for the time being, but that will, quote-unquote, trickle down eventually.
This reminds me of where it said that it's not what you know, it's who you know, your connections, because normally people would promote themselves, you know, by word of mouth and their fans and so on. But if you know somebody who can spread your information or even get you published, then there you go. On the other hand, you have people who probably don't really deserve to be published, and yet because they know somebody, they're able to do that.
Yeah, well, there are lousy ideas and there are good ideas, right?
Yeah.
And who's to judge?
The reader, the person who is... reading it or spending money on
it. That's the only judge. The only judge is you and me as we each individually read it. Okay? But if we're going to bring in this artificial arbiter that says, well, wait a minute, somebody owns that idea over there, so you're not allowed to express that idea. You're not allowed to re-express that idea, and therefore the ideas you've built off of that are now null and void.
I mean, in Ryan's case, it certainly didn't harm him that his professor used or quoted from his paper on the I Ching. But, I mean, it could be an issue elsewhere, I suppose, if the original creator doesn't have a way of getting publicity or having people able to find his work. Because if somebody quotes from him without attributing to him, then how do they know where to get more of that?
Well, the other people are harmed, but Ryan wasn't harmed.
Right.
Okay? So, and of course, the person that grabbed Ryan's credentials and took them away from him, that person also harmed himself because they dropped their integrity.
But, I mean, I think there's a couple of more issues to the mix of this. I mean, there's certainly a value in being able to communicate ideas, and like you said, can make connections to know the right people and tell the right ideas to them and to get them to go around.
Right. What kind of audience do you want your information to go to? You have, you know, people sometimes they have hidden prejudices where they'll just reject ideas outright.
But whether an idea is rejected or accepted or not is really immaterial. It's not important. Let's just say for the moment that the Libertarian Institute, Mises Institute, has been promoting this idea to end intellectual property and showing its flaws and faults in our society. Let's say they copywrote that idea. Well, we would be violating that copyright to have this conversation right now.
Right.
So we couldn't have this conversation. They could call us up right now and say, get that podcast off your site. We own that. Ideas, in order to flourish in an evolving society, ideas need to flow like blood needs to flow through the body. It can't reach the elbow and say, we can't go any further unless you send me $29.95. There's a difference between identifying an idea and possessing an idea. Okay? Possession requires a physical object. Identifying is an egoic situation, it's psychological. Okay, that's an, you know, that's up there in the world of ideas. Okay? It's one thing to identify. Let's get more concrete for a moment, and let's talk about real things that have happened to me and our websites here.
Okay.
Crowley goes and he translates the I Ching. Okay? So the I Ching itself was written thousands of years ago, so there's no copyright on the I Ching written in Chinese. Of course, the way copyright law works today, if somebody were to translate it into English, they would own that translation, because there's no such thing as an exact translation, right? You have to make choices on words and sentence fragments, et cetera, et cetera, before, you know, so a translation could become quite unique. All four of us could learn Chinese fluently and go back and translate the I Ching independently. We'll come up with four separate versions. So Crowley came up with his version of the I Ching, which he happened to leave to copyright into his material. At least the Caliph at OTL managed to claim this as copyrighted material, which they'll own for probably about another 20 years yet, before even that copyright law will finally expire and it'll go in public domain. Now, along comes Moda, long before the Caliphate even exists and anyone is claiming to own OTL copyrights. And Moda appends his own commentaries to Crowley's translation and Crowley's commentaries to that translation. So now you have this document with Crowley's commentaries to Crowley's translation with Moda's commentaries appended onto it. Then I come along and I say, wow, this is all fascinating, and I got plenty that I want to say here, so I'm going to append my own commentaries onto that. So I do that. And I have this now large, rich document of Crowley's commentaries, Moda's commentaries, and my commentaries appended onto Crowley's translation. The Caliphate comes along, and they get their lawyers to contact my web service provider and say, get that off the website. It's violating our copyright.
PJ, you brought up a really good point, and I wanted to say something on that. And it reminds me of all the people who are, I don't know what you would say, maybe Crowley mongers or something like that, where they're so proud that they have copyrights on Crowley stuff that they're saying, well, this is how you do it because this is what Crowley said. And
yeah, the Crowley fan club.
Yeah, and they don't allow new ideas.
They're definitely not people belonging to a legitimate order then, as per the conclusions that we shared in the last podcast.
Yeah, but again, that's all sidebar. What's happened now is ideas have been claimed as owned, and those ideas have been forcibly removed from the human community where other people might have latched on to those ideas, and said, wow, I really dig that. Between Crowley's motives and Ravelli's comments, I've got some ideas of my own. Or I've got criticisms. I don't like what Ravelli said here, what Moda said there, and what Crowley said here. And I'm going to start to rearrange this a little bit. But a lot of it I'll leave intact because I still like it. But my new take will give a whole new idea of the I Ching to a vast number of people. And maybe that fourth person, depending onto it, might have given the human community something of even greater value.
Yeah.
But it can't happen then.
There is a bit more about that. Basically, the idea that if you're not the authority on the subject, then you're not able to contribute, at least that's the criticism, because that quote-unquote authority should have the monopoly of ideas on the subject. Happened to me. I'm sorry.
That's just an excuse for ownership.
Right. Well, okay. What's happened to me also in another situation was where I wrote this brief little poem on the video. It was the Plato's allegory, but with clay, the little clay figurines.
Right.
And so it was, you know, a really great video, and I wrrote a short little poem, and somebody came along and said, well, I don't see what the poem has to do with the allegory. And they're, and I said, okay, then what are you going on? They're like, Plato's Republic. And I'm like, okay, this is a poem, and this is, you know, what I came up with. But they were so fixated on the fact that I wasn't, you know, quoting from Plato's Republic, or that I wasn't using Plato's Republic, you know.
But all somebody's doing there is arguing that they didn't like your idea. People have the right not to like your idea. People have the right to like your idea.
But that's true, but he's trying to argue it on basis of, well, Plato was the original authority on the matter, and he, you know, it ends there.
Yeah, the final word.
Yeah, but...
Right, exactly.
Well, I mean, if your point is that Plato then owns the idea, and nobody is allowed to then derive new ideas from that original idea, well, then you're addressing this idea of intellectual property from another angle.
Right.
Not
that's
financial
what
ownership, but from intellectual ownership.
Right, the monopoly of ideas, I guess.
So I have no right to criticize a Charles Dickens classic. I have no right to criticize it because only Charles Dickens is allowed to criticize his own work. So there's always an idiot out there to do that. And I should be careful to say that only in that who determines that that guy is an idiot? I do. There's no such thing as an authority. I may consider that guy an idiot. Somebody else may find that that guy's words were wise. Who's right? Neither of us. Okay? I can prove myself right based on argument in debate, but who's going to determine whether I won that debate or not? Somebody listening to the debate. And since when has a debate ever been, 100% of the audience chosen the winner of the debate? It never happens. Okay? So there's no such thing as authority. Authority is a pretense used to control ideas. Okay? Mm. Caliphate claims authority over Crowley and Thelema so that they can control the ideas of Thelema. And people are only allowed to experience certain ideas in Thelema because the caliphate will come, and in a variety of ways, if they can use copyright lawsuits, they'll stop your idea from proliferating that way. If they can find other ways to assault you and condemn you, I mean, the caliphate stopped me from publishing by writing to certain publishers and telling them that I was racist. That prevented me from publishing. Hmm. So, you know, the caliphate is all about keep making sure that they have control of the idea called polemic philosophy.
Which leads us, I'm not sure which topics you covered so far while I was gone, but I keep wanting to bring up the fact that I do believe that the concept of intellectual property and its enforcement as such, meaning as described by you and the three of us to this point, isn't commensurate with Thelemic philosophy at all.
Indeed. And the problem gets to be even worse. How many Thelemites are there in this world of 8 billion people, where maybe 2 billion of them are Christian, 2 billion of them are Buddhist, 2 billion of them are Islam, you know what I'm saying? 2 billion of them are Hindu, and maybe on a good day of the sun shining, right, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 people are Thelemic. If you want Thelemic philosophy to proliferate into the world so that the world will evolve to a greater insight on the nature of what is divine and what is human, etc., well, if you're going to run around and make sure that 3,000 or 2,999 people can't talk about anything unless one guy at the top says, oh, okay, you can.
Hmm.
Well, ideas are dead. There's no chance to proliferate Thelemic philosophy.
But I think we better be careful because we did talk about the OTO, and that might be a patented word. I don't know if we could publish this stuff. So anyways, and if anybody has any unclarity on where this violates Thelemic philosophy, a very simple document, Liber Oz, which is a Thelemic Declaration of the Rights of Man, which says we have the right to create and to express ideas as we will.
Yeah, man has the right to write, W-R-I-T-E, what he will.
Yeah.
Well, I will was to write commentary and publish Crowley's I Ching. And the leader of the caliphate, if you go on my website, you will find an affidavit signed by William Breeze saying I violated the copyright. So I don't have the right to write what I will, according to William Breeze, the major exponent of Thelema in the world today.
But you got to understand, PJ, is he only he knows his will, and maybe you don't know your will, and he has to tell you what your will is. This is the other trap that the Thelemics play, is that they know your will and they know, and you don't, you know. So
that's one of Ray Yield's famous tricks, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So I go ahead and I publish Moda's Black Lodge paper. Okay. Now, these Black Lodge papers would be theoretically important, right? They're going to talk about dangerous behavior and things that are going to thwart human evolution. But Ray Yields doesn't want you to know, have that knowledge, unless you send Hoare a lot of money and go through initiations and whatever, then you can get this knowledge. And so the rest of humanity just has to suffer and die. So Ray Yields sends his copyright enforcer, there's a spiritual organization with a copyright enforcer, out there who signs an affidavit saying that I have now published a copywritten material that they own. So we have to ask, like the caliphate, is Hoare really out there to help humanity, or are they just trying to get $29.95 plus initiation fees?
Yeah, these are some big questions to ask, which also leads into the area of where do people draw the line between earning an honest living and pursuing spiritual work.
Well, now, if I take my idea and I copy that onto a tangible product, a pulp that's formed into a book, oil that's formed into a CD or a DVD, if I do that, well, then I have the right to sell that because that's a tangible product. But if you then take the information, the idea that's on that product, put it on your own piece of pulp, your own formulated piece of oil dug from the ground, and you start selling it, have you hurt me?
It depends.
You didn't steal my pulp. You didn't steal my oil.
Hmm.
Okay? And you've put out those ideas that are now serving human community of ideas that we might evolve through that. Okay? So you've now, one thing is clear, whether you've heard me or not may still be unclear, but one thing that is terribly clear is that you've now proliferated those ideas even further into the human community, and the human community has benefited from it. Because you've reached markets I couldn't.
Yeah, well, this is entering a whole new level of looking at the idea of a free market as well.
Well, yeah.
And
in the end, does IP create a free market, or does it create a mercantile-controlled market that ultimately, in the end, will only serve an aristocracy?
I've asked you about this also, PJ, as far as making money. Well, this has to do with the question of financial gain, but also combining work life with, I suppose, spiritual life, with, you know, astrology being a form of divination. But, for example, if I were to make money off of doing astrology readings for other people.
Well, now, again, doing an astrology reading is a personal one-to-one consultation. You know, even with the propagation of ideas, I might contractually delimit my idea to a certain degree, okay? An astrology reading is a contract. It might be a verbal contract, but it's a contract between you and the person you're reading for. They're recognizing you as an authority, as somebody who can give advice, and they're willing to buy some of your time to get that advice from you. That's a private contract. That has nothing to do with us, okay, and the human community at large. And you're not trying to put forth any ideas that might concern us either. Your ideas that you're putting forth are only of concern to your client. Okay? Well, that's okay. I mean, that, you know, in the end, that's none of my business.
But it's indirectly answering one of my initial queries that I had in our first run on this topic, which was how do we protect the non-tangible resources of time, work, and training, and while dealing with this concept of free ideas. And maybe the one way of balancing that out in this new paradigm is through the concept of the contract and time, and how we collect our dues that are due to us through how we use the resources of our own time or material means to express those ideas or to build them. I mean, we're responsible for setting up our contracts and for making business agreements for when we develop and express ideas, if that is part of our profession.
Well, the other thing about the OTO and its copyrights is that, the financial gain as far as not only that, but the idea that you can make money off of magic or even doing magic for other people.
I can create a great idea, put it down in a book, and, Parabola Publishers is going to come to me and say, well, we like your idea. We're willing to copy your book 10,000 times because we feel there's a market of 10,000 people that would buy that. So we're going to create a contract with you where you're not going to be able to express that idea with Wiser Publishers and let them publish it. We're going to tell you that you can't do that because we're going to take on the expense of creating 10,000 copies of the book that we've got to market. Okay? And when that contract comes to an end, though, I'm free now to go over to Wiser Publisher and say, okay, if you've got another market of 10,000 people, fuck. And they're going to create copyrights. They're going to say you can't copy my book because that's the world we live in. And even though I'm practicing IP, I may try to make an arrangement with them saying, well, I'm still going to put my book up on my website for everyone to read. Well, that's fine too. As a matter of fact, most publishers, artists, etc., have no problem with that today. As a matter of fact, if I was to contract with a publisher to publish my book, and I put the book on the website for free, well, most people really don't really read on the web anyway. It's just a real teaser. You know, I just bought a book the other day. I have the PDF file on my computer, but I can't read it on the damn computer. I went out and bought it anyway. Because it's easier to sit down in a chair and read a book than it is to sit in front of my computer screen and read that same book. So the virtual version of that book on the internet only teased me well enough to go to the publisher and buy it. And, you know, the Grateful Dead has made a career out of that. You can go to their concerts and they'll plug you right into their sound mixing board. Go ahead, record everything you want. It's made them one of the most sold bands today. IP does not only not victimize the person generating the idea, but it indeed becomes a publicity tool. Why do you think we get Internet Explorer and Firefox for free?
Well, intellectual property, if you look at this idea of piracy and so on, it's considering that, for example, it's saying that the group, the corporation, or the record company is more important than the individual, because even without piracy, that artist gets like such a small percentage of the revenue anyways.
Exactly. So you've made a great point here. The only one that suffers when an idea is proliferated beyond the copyright is the large organization. Without intellectual property, the people that would gain from that are all the individuals like you and me and others.
Please
go on my website, steal everything you want from it. Copy it. Now, I've gone and David has a business where he and his partner design websites. They make their living off of designing these websites, okay? So somebody's going to come across my four websites because contractually I paid them X sum of dollars to do what they do for a living, and they've designed for me a really great website. I think it looks fabulous, okay? Now, what if some other web designer came along, and because now I own that website, right? I contracted with them. All those ideas are mine. I bought them from them, okay? But what if somebody else comes along and says, wow, I really dig PJ's website. I'm going to do the same thing. I'll put the sliders up there like this. Our website, big background colors. Have I been harmed? Because I own that design now. I bought it. You know, what if David goes out and does the same exact design for another one of his clients? Have I been harmed? No.
Well, PJ, would that be okay if we sold the same design to other people?
Yeah. I mean, you're not going to harm me by doing that. You know, if anything, now you've started to set up a new standard. It may not only make my website be that much more attractive to other people, but it might show that you guys create unique, cool websites that everybody wants to imitate. And indeed, become the first imitator of your own designs. You know, there's no harm in repeating an idea. And the only ones that can gain from it are all the individuals that started to generate those ideas. You know, who cares if somebody in China copies your website design?
Yeah. Actually, I think an openness with ideas like that points out the confidence you have in your ability to create new ones.
Yes. Yep. That's a big key to a quote that I really love on PJ's editorial site. Is that a wise man is flattered whenever somebody steals his ideas. And if somebody complains about their ideas being stolen, you're now flattering the thief.
Yeah.
Because if you truly are creative and have the genius that it takes, nobody can really steal your ideas. You got more where it came from, and the person who's stealing from you doesn't.
Yes.
They're going to have to keep stealing from you and others, whereas you can just keep producing.
Their market is going to be to people who are going to want to buy that anyway instead of, for example, creating by themselves.
Yeah, so, and then you can, you can counter-advertise and say, why you go to the imitator when you can go to the originator?
Ah, that's a beautiful thing, right?
Yeah, exactly.
If I write a great song here, I'm gonna write a really great song. At least somebody in some corner of this earth can find the song really great. Blah 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 blah. Okay, somebody somewhere is gonna be stupid enough to think that's the world's greatest song ever written. Okay, so now if that person goes out there somewhere and copies this off of our little podcast here, and so now you're gonna hear a recording of me going blah 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 blah, but there's nobody that can create my voice again. Okay, so but they're going to put their name on it. Then they're going to show up for the concert, and they're going to go, "That's not his voice." And I can turn around and say, "Well, you know, I'm the guy that actually wrote that song." Blah blah blah. Can you hear my voice?
Hey, no, it's easy. Just do Milli Vanilli. You know, you will just play your voice in the background, and I lip sync to it. Don't worry.